Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Say, did you ever think about how much you've learned by just observing nature? We're looking at learning through nature play with our two guests today. Monica Wiedel-Lubinsky has over two decades of leadership in nature-based education in local, regional, national, and even international platforms. She was the founding director of the Nature Preschool at Irvine Nature Center and is currently the director of the Eastern Region Association of Forest and Nature Schools. Monica, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, great to have you with us. With her, Karen Madigan has worked with children, families, and educators for over 25 years. She's been an educator at Irvine Nature Center in Owings Mills, Maryland, since 2009, and was instrumental in establishing the Nature Preschool. And Karen, it's great to have you with us as well.
Thank you, Larry. It's great to be here.
They have written a new book. It's called Nature Play Workshop for Families, a guide to 40-plus outdoor learning experiences in all seasons. And it's a fascinating book. I really enjoyed going through it. And we'll learn about the book and, of course, talk about nature play with our two guests. And I hope you'll join in the conversation. Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. How do you get involved in nature play, perhaps with your children or maybe your grandchildren? Love to hear from you. Let's start by explaining the idea behind nature play. Monica, maybe you could start.
Sure, absolutely. Nature play, it might sound like a very simple concept, and in some ways it is. Nature play is just going outside and experiencing the outdoors. But to take that to some deeper, more meaningful levels, really, we're hardwired to be part of nature, survive in the natural world, and many of us are disconnected from that sort of core wiring. So nature play is a way for children and for families to get back outside and just, you know, feel what it means to be part of the whole of the world, really. So that's, in a nutshell, what it means.
Karen, maybe Karen, you could give us an example of how this works.
Well, children, you know, as you know, love to play. They love to explore. And being outside is just, it's such a treat for the senses. And they immediately become engaged in anything that they happen to find out there. It could be a stick, a rock, a tree, anything that is part of our world can be exciting to children. And simply just being out there and being able to you know, get down and dirty and play is just such an inviting thing for children.
Yeah. How'd you get involved in this type of learning, Karen?
Well, I was teaching in a traditional preschool for many years, and I had left that job and was sort of searching around for something else, and I found out about a program that was happening at Irvine Nature Center in Owings Mills, and I applied for the job, met with Monica, and I just fell in love with the idea of outdoor learning and being outdoors with children, connecting them with nature. And after, you know, a few years of working in a very, very small program called Doodle Bugs, it was an art and nature 1 day a week program. Monica and I put our heads together and thought, you know, why can't we take this to more families and start a licensed preschool that is an outdoor preschool. And that's what we did.
That is so cool. Monica, how did you get involved in all of this type of learning? I mean, you're all even at the international level.
You know, it started for me with not really realizing some of the experiences that I had in my childhood. I consider my childhood very ordinary. Grew up in the suburbs, and despite not living in the wilderness, not growing up camping, I did have some important nature connection pieces with a maple tree in my front yard and blackberries growing in the scrubby edge between the fences that divided some of the neighbors' yards and picking the honeysuckle or the mint in the backyard. So it wasn't that there was a lot of space even. It was just I did have some of those experiences, but it wasn't until I was late in my teens that I had another experience as an intern at a nature center at Irvine where it was like the wonder that was inside me, something stirred, and I just realized there was so much more that I wanted to know. And from there, again, this gift of working at this nature center for almost 20 years, it really allowed me to explore my own personal nature connection and also just gain that understanding of how much it means to all of us, how much it means to children and families. And so for me, it really unfolded in that way. And once we established the nature preschool, we established it as a licensed and NAEYC accredited nature preschool, which in the world of early childhood education, that stands for the National Association for the Education of Young Children. And it's really a gold standard for all early learning programs. So as we established our nature preschool as one of the only in Maryland, we were being contacted left and right by so many other programs and so many other individuals that wanted to do this work. So through the growth of the nature preschool and through, again, going from not only honing my craft, working directly with children outdoors, but and my personal nature connection to how do I support other teachers who are now my staff, teachers who are reaching out, who want to do this work. It just crystallized in me the vital importance of training, of teacher training. And so when I resigned in 2016 to form the Eastern Region Association of Forest and Nature Schools, the goal was how do we provide high-quality nature-based teacher training so that more people can engage in this work. And over the course of the last 4 years in that, we've worked with people from all over the country, certainly all over the world. We just wrapped up a course, and there were people from Bulgaria, the Philippines, Mexico, just really people from all over reaching out, participating in these kinds of training. So that's how I've been involved in that regard.
So maybe, Karen, you could talk about what a day at school looks like for these kids.
Oh, wow. It starts out with arrival, and the children sort of, they have a chunk of time where they're in free play, choosing the types of things that they want to do. And then just like any other traditional preschool, the children would come together for circle time and sing songs and talk about what they're going to do that day, and maybe they have something to share that they want to talk about, something interesting that they've done at home or something like that. And then we would have a little snack and then head outside for the rest of the day. And out there, we are simply playing in nature, exploring. There are sometimes tools that we offer the children, such as magnifiers or little pails or scissors or anything you can think of, and they just use those things to explore and learn, and they're playing with each other, so they're learning how to cooperate. They're climbing, they're running and hiking and just doing
Sounds
all sorts
ideal.
Of things that it's amazing. It's amazing. And we've definitely found over the many years we've been doing this that children are so prepared for when they move on to regular school or as they grow older and go to kindergarten and beyond, the skills that they develop in this way are skills that I don't think people could children could learn if they weren't outdoors doing all of these risk-taking types of things and making choices and building their confidence. And it's just really, truly an amazing thing that happens.
You know, Richard in Two Rivers has a comment or question for you. Let's go there. Richard, hi. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Hey, Larry. How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I've worked with children for many years, and one of my concerns is the fact that children lose their autonomy because adults schedule everything. And I grew up on the streets of New York, and what I did and figured it out on my own, they had a bounty on rats. And I killed rats. I brought them to the town hall and got a quarter apiece. Nobody taught me how to do that.
Wow.
And now everything's structured. And will it ever go back to where children could just figure it out on their own?
Yeah.
I could
we
speak
hope
to that.
Okay.
We have that same we have that same concern. We do live in a really highly structured society, and a lot of times when children have time to play, they're bored and they don't know what to do, and the time gets filled with screens or it's spent in a car going from point A to point B. So, Richard, you're right. We have the same concern. And what we've seen is through these open-ended, very unstructured time in nature where teachers are aware of hazards but encourage children taking supported risks, kids, they learn to weigh for themselves what they can and cannot do, and they become very confident, very resilient risk takers, and they also rely on each other. They develop trust for other people. They learn to ask for help, but only when it's needed, and that's different than a teacher saying, you can't do that, don't do that, ask for permission. That sends a message that the child isn't able to weigh the choice for themselves. And that sends a message that teachers have all the answers and children should second guess their instincts versus going outside, seeing if they can climb on that log, experimenting in whatever ways they are with the sticks or the twigs or the creatures, tiny creatures that they choose to maybe interact with. They can develop and weigh for themselves what risk they want to take. And it's not always a physical risk. Sometimes it's an emotional risk of something that they have to feel brave enough to try. So this kind of unstructured and really open-ended nature play can help. I mean, Karen, you might have things to add with that too.
I'm thinking about the sort of the empathy that develops inside children when, you know, they start to care for something. They care for an animal or a plant, or there's a special tree that they've grown to love. It really does help them to start to get in touch with their feelings. And everything that you said is true, Monica. And we definitely know that it can be too much for children when they have so many things scheduled. You know, they have lessons and they have school, and then, you know, they just have so much going on in their lives. It can really benefit them if they just can have a chunk of unstructured time to play every day.
Yeah. And Richard, I thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your call very much. Karen Madigan and Monica Wedel-Lubinsky, our guests today. They are the authors of Nature Play Workshop for Families, a guide to 40-plus outdoor learning experiences in all seasons. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer, Tyler Ditter, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at outdoor learning in all seasons for our children with Karen Madigan and Monica Wedel-Lubinsky, authors of Nature Play Workshop for Families. It's great to have them with us, and certainly thank you so much for joining in. We have Tammy in Whitehall up with a comment, I believe. Let's go there. Tammy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was just going to mention my sister-in-law used to organize scavenger hunts for the kids and the adults at family functions. So she would make a list, and we'd go out and find, you know, a smooth rock, a stick with, you know, something on it, a feather, maybe a piece of garbage. So anyway, they develop, we have them all be in teams, and then whoever got all the things on the list would win. And it was just a really neat way to teach children about nature. Plus you're cleaning the environment wherever you do it. And it was just really fun.
Oh, great experience. Karen, a comment?
Oh, that's so fun. And children absolutely love scavenger hunts, and I love scavenger hunts as an adult. And we actually have a scavenger hunt in our book, Nature Play Workshop for Families. It's called Nature in the City Scavenger Hunt. And it's just too much fun to
just. Well, let's talk about the book for just a minute. What inspired you to write it?
Monica, I'll let you answer that.
I mean, we just love being outdoors with children. We feel like play is an important topic, and we know that families sometimes struggle with just how to do it, what it is, and so for Karen and I, we in our realm with children in forest and nature school settings, we are always trying to lean on that emergent outdoor learning, the open-ended aspect of play and exploration and inquiry. But we know that parents don't always know how to facilitate, you know, they don't know how to say, just go outside and play. Or in some situations, they don't feel that it's safe for their child to do that. So we wanted to create a resource that would have ways for parents to talk about and think about outdoor nature play experiences that they could have together, and then also combine it with projects that are, you know, just fun, simple. Some of them are more complex than others, but something that families could do together in every season. So we just wanted to give a balance of those two approaches.
Yeah, and I do like the book, and we'll talk some more about it, but it's great photos and great directions, easy to follow directions, and you get to see the results of through photos of what you might be making or having the kids do. It's really a nice book. I have it in front of me right now. Well, Sharon in Dubuque, Sharon in Dubuque, Iowa. It's your turn. What's on your mind?
Hey. Well, I just wanted to say that when my kids were little, and now my grandkids, we go down to our park, and they go crick stomping, and there's clay deposits in the crick, and they will collect the clay and take it out and make little saucers or cups, and then we take it home and put it on the deck and let them dry it. They always got a big kick out of that.
What another good idea, I think. Isn't it, Karen?
That is wonderful. Just imagine the feeling that they have when they've made something on their own out of something they found outside, and then they can share it with the rest of the world, and it's just a beautiful thing.
Thank you so much. Phil in Appleton, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Phil.
Murray?
Hi.
Murray? This is Phil again. Last time I saw you, I told your recipient there that I had seen you up at Mansour Squatters many years ago. I don't remember that or not. But anyway, I've been looking for a long time. I'll be 80 in October. And I've been looking for a long time to share the secrets I learned about nature. I was talking to my daddy when I was 5 or 6 years old. He said, the best thing you can do is go out and sit on a stump or a little bump. And we considered a hill out there in that old swamp we lived in was something 3 or 4 feet above water. But anyway, I learned how to do that, and I've learned so much since then. I would love to share that with Karen and sometime down the line, because I did things that the scientists say you can't do, and I'm still doing it. For instance, trees breathe, and they have an inhale and exhale, and old farmer told me one time, says, "Why, you can't be a farmer successful unless you go through 3 or 4 years of crop failures." I don't know how many can do that now, but not many.
Well, you know, this whole business of get out in nature, sit still, and just take a look around. Sometimes you don't have to be tearing around to learn a lot about nature. I agree with Phil on that. I've spent many hours in the woods just sitting, and you learn a lot just sitting, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to point out that one of the core routines for Nature Connection that we integrate into Forest and Nature School programs is called a sit spot routine. It's exactly what you're talking about. It's meant to help children identify a place there that feels like it's calling to them, and they sit. And they might sit for 3 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes. They grow to be able to be really good at this, even three-year-olds. And they sit in stillness. That's what it is. They're listening and they're coming to be present in the moment, noticing the wind, noticing the birds or the cicadas or the tiny sprout they hadn't noticed the week before. So you're absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. That's a really important part of nature connection and also mindfulness. The children can learn to feel more grateful for where we are when we just stop and notice what's happening in the present moment. So I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you, Phil. Appreciate it very much. Roger in Granford, your turn. Hi, Roger.
Hi, Larry. Good top of the morning to you. Love the show. The kids up here, they've been getting into the geocaching. And I think that is one of the neatest things that they can get out and they can use, you know, clues as to what you go look for stuff. And even what they find, you know, it ain't much, but it's still something that gets them outside, gets them away from the computers and sitting. I think it's just the greatest thing. Only we have ran into some people, but one lady here, she come out screaming the tree was there was a big tree with a big burl on it, and they had something hanging in there. It was right by the road, and she come out screaming at him, "Get off my property!" And I was like, "Come on!" It's like my God, you got a van full of grandma and the kids. Like they're really doing damage. You know?
Well, yeah. Hopefully that doesn't happen often. But what about geocaching? What do you think about that, Monica?
I think geocaching is a really nice blend of technology, which sometimes educators feel that if you're engaging in nature play, that it's either or, that it's technology or nature, but you know, as we know, technology plays a really important role in all of our lives to different degrees. So geocaching is a nice way to, let kids have some sort of a gadget, but also get that wonderful nature wander in. Yeah. And they're going to discover some other things along the way. So that is a wonderful activity to do together as a family.
Thanks, Roger. Joe in Star Lake, it's your turn. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate being on the show. My wife, Paul, and I ran a camp ourselves up in the mountains of the Sierra Mountains in California called Camp Imagine Action. And I'm calling because I just want to talk about the importance of folk tales in this process of enchanting children with the natural world. I sometimes think we don't see that as a modern society, but almost every traditional society has always had this rich folklore of where the woodpecker came from and how the rattlesnake got its rattle and how this particular tree grew because this happened. It gives a story lore for the imagination to engage in the world with almost dimensions of magic and possibility. So if you wanted to talk to that, I'd appreciate that.
Joe, thanks very much for calling. Well, Monica, do you want to take that?
I would agree that oral storytelling in many ways is a lost tradition. And you're right. There are some beautiful creation stories that indigenous cultures have. I think that goes to the heart of how important it is for us to acknowledge the role of the indigenous keepers of the lands that we use. And again, that's one of those things that, you know, sometimes we're borrowing aspects of another culture and we don't really do it with malintent, but it if we can put some intention behind knowing who the indigenous keepers are of the of our culture, and then really learning and sharing stories in an authentic way, I think that that, again, it just it helps children make a meaningful connection with the land. And Karen, I can think of a couple of fun ways that we used to use stones for storytelling. Do you want to share that?
Sure. I did want to just quickly say that Monica is a very good storyteller, and she knows those folk tales, and she can spew them out very confidently. So that's a really, really great question that the caller had, or comment, I should say. But yes, we encourage storytelling with the children in all sorts of ways, and Monica had mentioned using rocks. So sometimes we have the children find a special stone or a rock, and we might paint a picture of something on it, or we might just make a bunch of them ourselves. And each child can choose a stone, and then together the children tell a story. And they use the picture on their stone to sort of give a prompt as to what they're going to say. And sometimes it turns out to be a story that makes sense, and other times it's rather interesting.
Silly.
But, you know, we find that encouraging them in that way to tell stories, or to even just speak, even just speaking in front of their friends, can be a little scary. And so when they have something that they're holding, it could be a stone with a picture, it could just be a stick, it could be anything, it could be a seashell, a flower, anything like that. Just having that object and being able to sort of like fidget with it and use it to spark something can help them to just more confidently express themselves.
Oh, that's great. You can join in too, by the way, with your own question, comment, or experience at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the book. I really enjoyed it. Maybe just before we do that, what do you tell adults who are concerned for the safety of their kids? That seems to be foremost in people's minds.
Yeah, I think that I would begin by reminding parents to think back about their own experiences as children. And many of us did have some risky play activities that maybe we would say, oh, would that even be permitted today? So, you know, first think about your own risky play experiences and what you may have gained as a result and what you may have learned as a result. Our feeling is that we're not trying to keep children in a bubble. It's exhausting to try to do so. So for parents to realize that there are a lot of wonderful benefits to inviting children to take risks and weigh those risks for themselves, it's empowering. I think every parent wants their child to grow up and be a confident, independent person. And if we're trying to raise children who are confident and capable of making those decisions, then we have to find appropriate, developmentally appropriate, but supported risks. So if there are real hazards in the environment and things that are dangerous, that's a different matter altogether. We're not asking parents to let their kids go run in the street and play. So I think just even making that distinction, a risk is something that has real benefit to children, and that's not the same as something that's dangerous or hazardous to the child.
Yeah, for sure. Alan in River Falls, your turn. Hi, Alan.
Okay, well, I just wanted to say that we have in the Twin Cities area that services both the Twin Cities and Western Wisconsin a nature-based preschool at the Dodge Nature Center. And that was founded by a woman named Olivia Irvin Dodge, who is also the founder of the Maryland operation. And
that
preschool has been there for at least 10 years. The Nature Center has been there for 50 years. And they serve over 50,000 kids a year coming in school field trips. plus they have 180 kids who go to the preschool in various, it's not, you know, all day, every day. It's the mornings or afternoons, different schedules are possible. But they're in West St. Paul, and people in the Twin Cities area who like this kind of nature-based education for preschoolers might want to take a look at the Dodge Nature Center.
Well, Alan, thanks a lot for calling. Monica, you've been there?
Go ahead, Karen. I know that you wanted to chime in, too.
Sorry. Yeah. Karen, go ahead.
The Dodge Nature Preschool is absolutely beautiful, and it was definitely founded by Olivia Irvine Dodge, who also founded Irvine. And I know Monica knows a lot more about the history than I do, but yes, it is an absolutely wonderful place.
Karen and I had the pleasure of visiting together for an event a few years back, and Marty Watson, who was the creator of the Dodge Nature Preschool, is also a real wealth of information in your area. So definitely take a look if you're looking for that type of program out in Minnesota.
Well, thanks again. Yeah, thank you, Alan, for calling. Appreciate it very much. Well, I want to take a look at some of the specific things in your book. One of the things that I enjoyed a lot was the fact that you have all four seasons represented. Fall is coming, so I was taking a look at a closer look at some of the fall things that you have for suggestions. And I thought, man, these are great suggestions for parents, because I think you're right. You know, a lot of times you might say, oh, go on out and play. But when you've got something specific like leaf crowns or making wild leaf lanterns, or one that I really liked, a Jack Frost glaze that pretty much anybody could make, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Those are really, really good examples. Or how to make a pine cone bird feeder. I was tempted to sit down and make the pumpkin apple soup.
It is delicious.
I was hungry as I was reading that. I think, oh, I wish I had some pumpkin with me right now. I've got apples, but I don't have any pumpkins. I'd go ahead. I have some squash. I was thinking squash and apple soup.
That would be good, too.
And when I got to the part about stick forts, I thought about, you know, I made stick forts when I was a kid. Along a creek bank, there were some branches and so forth, and I put together a stick fort. But you have some really good examples, and here I've gone through many of them. Well, let's take Jack Frost glaze just quickly. What is that about?
Yeah, we were just, we brainstormed lots of ideas in each chapter, and some of them are more like science experiments, and this is a good example of that, just trying to see how you can get these crystals to form. So although it's not formed as a result of the cold air like real frost would be, it's a really different kind of thing to try. So it's not hard to make, and you can, once you've made the glaze, you can store it for a little while, and it has this really fun effect on a window pane. So if you're just welcoming fall, you know, it's a great thing to make and even kind of paint on your window or your door to say hi to Jack Frost. So it's something fun.
Oh, I love that, those ideas, and there are others in there for fall and winter seasons as well, of course. A star viewing wand and information on tracks. We used to play fox and hounds. I think we called it fox and geese, maybe is what you call it. I love this sparkling ice village idea too, which again is something pretty simple to do. Karen.
Yeah, it is simple. It just takes water and containers and a freezer, or if it's cold enough outside, you can you know, fill up the containers and leave them out to freeze, which is another science experiment. And then once you you pop them out of their containers, you can build a castle and then use some watercolors or paint to decorate it.
Yeah,
it's tons of fun.
Tons of fun. Sarah in Lodi, we'll give you a chance. Thanks for calling.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. I just, when my kids were little, I remember being out in the garden with my daughter, and she was really little. We were still reading Miss Spider's Tea Party book at the time.
Oh, I love that book.
And I saw a huge garden spider, which we've had them for years. And they're black and white and big. And I pointed it out to her and talked about why we don't hurt them. And she looked at me and she said, "Mom, that's Miss Spider." And I realized Miss Spider looked so much like the garden party, or the garden party, I'm thinking of the tea party, the garden spider. And we ended up having this conversation about spiders and what they do. And, you know, you can't touch them, but we have to protect them. And I wasn't exactly loving the spider, but, you know, but I didn't show her that. And then the other thing I wanted to say, when my kids were little, it was spring melt. And we live in the country. We're not on a farm. We have a farmette. And the spring melt was coming down through the hills and past our house. And the kids ran in and said, "Can we go out and play in that stream?" And I said, "Sure." I thought, oh, God, they're going to freeze. They put their rubber barn boots on and they ran out there. And they had so much fun splashing in that water. And when I was telling people at work about it, nobody said, "Oh, how fun." They all totally freaked out that I would ever let my kids do that because there might be manure in the water. And I'm like, "Do you not have a shower?"
Well, thanks so much, Sarah, for calling. And, yeah. And you do have... You do, in the book, have some learning experiences outdoors around insects, spiders, and so forth.
Yes, we do. I was going to say that the caller was absolutely right to model that, you know, calm feeling about the spider and to let her kids play in the stream. I mean, that's wonderful. She definitely gets it.
Well, I'm sure there are some parents and grandparents out there right now wondering, well, how am I going to get a copy of this book? And again, the title's Nature Play Workshops for Families, A Guide to 40-Plus Outdoor Learning Experiences in All Seasons. How do we get copies of the book?
You can find it at any major bookseller online, and hopefully you will have no problem getting it right away. we want it in your hands.
Well, you know, and during this COVID time, it's just another little inspiration for getting outdoors with the kids and doing some things with them, I think.
Very timely.
So many people. Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I guess we didn't really touch on a lot of the benefits of this type of learning, but I will say that stress relief is a huge benefit to outdoor play and outdoor learning. There's a lot of studies that talk about the calming effects of being outdoors, whether it's because you're being more active and your body's releasing endorphins, or just the scenery itself, There's a lot of influences that make outdoor play a very calming experience, even reducing the effects in some cases of children with ADHD. So real benefits, and especially now when all of us have experienced this social trauma of the coronavirus, being outdoors can provide a sense of calm for children and their teachers.
Yeah, well, it's been a great pleasure talking with both of you, Karen and Monica. I want to thank you so much for being with us. I hope your book lands in a lot of laps around the country. It'll work anywhere in the world, I guess you could probably say. Certainly here in the United States. And Again, a great pleasure, Karen. And Monica, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you for having us. It was wonderful.
It was a lot of fun. Karen Madigan worked closely with children, families, and fellow educators for over 25 years. Been an educator at Irvine Nature Center in Owings Mills, Maryland since 2009. Instrumental in establishing the Nature Preschool. And Monica Wiedel-Lubinsky brings over two decades of leadership in nature-based education, the founding director of the Nature Preschool at Irvine Nature Center. Great to have them with us. Again, the book's titled Nature Play Workshop for Families, a guide to 40-plus outdoor learning experiences in all seasons. Well, one way to learn a little about the outdoors is to spend some time outdoors fishing. And our next guest not only does a lot of fishing, but he writes poetry about it as well. And he has a book out called Lines from Upstream. Scott Schmidt, our guest next. I'm Larry Mealer.